Welcome, everybody. It is Friday. It is May 1st. We're already in May, and we're about to begin week 5. So we'll help you out with your week 5 lineups. I'm Adam Azer with Al Melchior and Scott White. And here on Friday morning, we're reading some emails. It's a mailbag show plus fantasy leaders, good starts from Paxton and Duffy, and plenty more. Al and Scott, how'd you enjoy the NFL draft last night?
I wouldn't know because I was busy watching Chris Sale just blow up my daily league, my weekly leagues. I probably would have been better off watching the draft.
Al must be the purest baseball fan of all of us, watching baseball the night of the first round of the draft.
Yeah, good job, Al. Also the least football fan of all of us.
Way to turn that smile upside down.
No, I mean, somebody had to watch baseball. I caught a little bit of Strasburg, but mostly I was watching the draft. Actually, doing an NFL draft recap podcast for the fantasy football draft later this morning. So for you fantasy football fans, make sure you listen to that. We're going to be talking winners and losers, and we'll do it again next week after the remaining rounds. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We're going to give you some advice on 2-star pitchers to add. Let's get into the big news. Carlos Correa. Oh, just real quick. Wait until you hear how I did in FanDuel last night.
I can't wait. I'm on pins and needles.
You shouldn't be able to wait, but you're going to have to wait until Heath comes in a little bit later. All right, Carlos Correa getting close to a promotion, but he is not ready yet. What is your read on this? Should he be owned? Should he be stashed? This is an Astros shortstop prospect who is an elite
really
prospect.
He has things to work on, you know, like Chris Bryant did.
Well, I mean, he is 20. It is a little,
he is a little different.
Slightly. I honestly think it's encouraging that they're at least open to the already talking about the possibility that maybe he could be ready at some point this year, because, you know, a lot of times, just when they want to keep the hype down, they won't even like invite that possibility. You know, it seems like they're inviting the possibility.
Okay. So I picked him up in our Roto League, but yeah. I could see myself dropping him if I need the roster spot. What about you? Like, I guess, when do you think he might be up, and do you want to own him right now, Carlos Correa?
I actually wrote about it in the recent prospects report. I'm thinking they'll go like a month with Marwin Gonzalez, Jonathan Villar. They're still looking like a team that could win the AL West at that point, and Correa is still performing at Double A like he has been. I think end of May is or early June is when we can potentially see Correa. So standard head-to-head league with 21 roster spots, I don't know that you can afford to invest one in him just yet. But anything deeper than that, I'd be looking to pick him up.
That sounds about right to me, too. It'd just be interesting to see what happens. It's a long time away, but when Jed Lowry comes back.
If he does. And that's a ligament torn from bone, they're saying, after the All-Star break. But I don't know that they necessarily mean June 20th or July 20th or whatever right after the All-Star break is.
Yeah.
And last question about Correa. And we've seen what Addison Russell has done. Not very much. Young shortstop. A lot of times prospects come up and they don't produce that well. So should we keep that in mind when we're stashing a guy on our roster and using a roster spot on someone who can't even help us right now?
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of built into what Scott was saying about, you know, in shallower leagues, that it's really premature to do so because there is that risk. But, I like Correa's chances a little better than Russell's to be productive right away.
Yordano Ventura dropped his appeal of his 7-game suspension. He is serving it now. Atlanta and Julio Teheran insist that Julio Teheran is healthy, but he needs to throw his fastball more. David Wright will not be back for at least another week. Albert Pujols was out yesterday with a hamstring injury, and the Angels are on the road. They're at San Francisco. They don't have a DH. You might not see Pujols this weekend. Anthony Rendon, I guess some better news last night. He could resume his rehab assignment today. Phil Hughes is going to make his next start. That's on Monday. He's a 2-star pitcher, right, Al?
That is correct now. Once again, that he is definitely back in the rotation.
Are you starting Phil Hughes?
Probably not. Probably not. I'm a little concerned. Want to see that he bounces back.
Trevor, okay.
And he's really healthy.
Yesterday, Al, you were into Mike Fultonevich for the Braves. He's going to start today. Freddie Gonzalez says Trevor Cahill's move to the bullpen is not permanent. What do you guys make of this situation?
Well, did you read the rest of the quote, though?
Oh, no, I didn't. Was there just a period at the end and that was it?
All right, this is the full quote. I told him this was not a permanent move, Gonzalez said. A lot of things can happen, right? You think he's going to be in the bullpen for a couple of weeks, and then one of our guys sprains a toe, and he's back in the rotation. For now, he can help us out in the bullpen.
Oh, that's not the same as it not being permanent.
Exactly.
What a lie. Yeah, okay, then it's permanent until someone gets
until
hurt.
It's not.
I understand. So that's good news for Fultonevich.
Yeah, I mean, he has to perform, but so far the minor league production has been much better than normal. He's getting the kind of strikeouts you'd expect somebody with a 100-mile-per-hour fastball to get. And I read that part of that's he incorporated a power slider into his arsenal. It was something he wasn't using that much. And it seems like the strikeouts have taken off. Control's still an issue, so that could hold him, that could keep him from being an impact player right away. But enough upside that he's worth a flyer.
And he starts against the Reds today, I believe. So, you know, you might want to pick him up now in case he has a good start and then everybody's all over him. Or you might just want to wait and see. Just think about it. And if you're in a roto league and you're the kind of guy who likes relievers who lower your whip, Carson Smith of Seattle is 3% owned. And in his career, he has now thrown 18 and a third dating back to last year. And he has not allowed a run yet. Gets good strikeouts, doesn't allow a lot of base runners, so he's cool. Carson Smith. Brett Cecil, I don't know if I mentioned this officially, but Brett Cecil is the Toronto closer now. Miguel Castro demoted from that role. Thursday standouts, before we get into the mailbag, and the fantasy leaders at three positions. We're going to look at fantasy leaders at outfield, at closer, or relief pitcher, and where was it? Catcher. Okay, but Thursday standouts, would you guys like to nominate a player?
Sure. Why not? How about Mr. Daniel Duffy? And we had a little discussion around the office yesterday about how he really hadn't been having a good season and wasn't, didn't look like a good play in daily, but, they goes out and has one of the better pitching performances last night and, did so in a way that I think, could maybe not so much with the strikeouts, 7 and 7 innings, but, it just with being having pretty good control and not giving up a ton of base hits, I think that's something that we could see more of going forward from Duffy. And he's had pretty good control in general this year.
And Duffy is 62% owned. So is James Paxton, coming off his best start of the season: 7 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts at the Astros. Gives him a strikeout per inning on the year. Who would you guys rather have, Paxton or Duffy?
I'd rather have Paxton. I feel like the upside is a little higher for him. I feel like he's been, apart from this year, he's been more consistent when he's been in the majors. I'm still not totally convinced of his health, but this start goes a long way toward convincing me.
Paxton also, just because Duffy, even at his best, he's going to be a guy that's going to be risky against power-hitting teams and hitters' parks. So Paxton, if he's right, if he's healthy, could be a must-start.
Paxton said that he was battling some mechanics issues. He was hurt in spring training and got off to a late start, and this was his best start. Would you rather have Paxton or Alfredo Simon?
Paxton.
Yeah, Paxton.
Would you rather have Shane Green or James Paxton?
Kind of leaning Green there, even with him getting rocked the last two times out.
Al.
I am too. We're on the same page today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I just have a moment of honesty here on the show?
Go ahead, Adam.
Kind of a boring day of baseball yesterday.
Well, you haven't even talked about the guy I'm sure a lot of people were, well, at least the ones who own him, were probably tuning into the podcast to hear about.
Strasburg?
No.
Oh, wait. Let me give me another guess.
Particularly DFS players, I guess.
Sale.
Yeah.
What are you going to say about Chris Sale?
Yeah, that's a good point.
He hasn't quite been Chris Sale this year. Like, he's not throwing 8 innings every time out. I mean, but he's still been pretty good before this horrible start. What'd you make of it? 3 innings, 9 runs, 8 earned, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts at Minnesota.
I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say I'm just really left without an explanation for it. And it was interesting and surprising to hear. It's actually the third time in his career that he's allowed eight earned runs. Because I thought, God, this has just got to be the worst start by far of his career. But, you know, even with this being the third occasion of that, you know, he's generally highly consistent. So I do view it as a blip on the radar.
He's not throwing his slider very much this year. Looking at Brooks' baseball, he's throwing it only like half as much as he did last year. I don't know that there's anything to make of that. I think it's not abnormal early in the year for pitchers breaking balls to be, for them to not have complete confidence in it yet. Especially since he did miss time with the foot injury in spring training.
The slide
piece. I don't think it's a big deal.
How about Strasburg? Any thoughts on Strasburg? He was pretty angry with Wilson Ramos, perhaps himself, and seems to be getting into it with his pitching coach. He's just kind of temperamental these days and got off to a bad start, but then settled in. Strasburg went 5 1/3, 6 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk and 7 strikeouts at the Mets. He's pitched 6 innings and only 2 of his 5 starts. But I guess I would call this a step in the right direction. Your thoughts on Strasburg, dudes?
Yeah, that 5 1/3 is actually the thing that sticks out. And maybe I'm just in a frame of mind where I'm now looking at ways to pick at Strasburg. Because really through the first 4 starts, he hadn't really been that good. And so, you know, now I'm kind of on alert for, you know, what could be wrong.
I think, Al, he threw about 100 pitches and had 9 swinging strikes, and that's been a problem for him. He's had 5 swinging strikes in 3 of his 5 starts.
Yeah, so obviously that's an improvement, but, you know, it's not an overwhelming number. I mean, 9%, that's a fairly average rate these days for a starting pitcher. And he's been fairly fly ball prone. So there's all kinds of things that still don't really look that encouraging for Strasburg. It was a better start, obviously, but it wasn't the one I was looking for where he comes out and, you know, gets 12 swings and misses and, you know, 9 strikeouts and, you know, goes 7 innings. He's got a ways to go still.
FanDuel hosts 1-day fantasy contest, and for every $1 you deposit, FanDuel's going to match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. And that is a bonus of up to $200. Go to FanDuel.com and use the offer code CBS. FanDuel.com. Use the offer code CBS. Sign up today. It is really fun. Even when you do as badly as I did last night, you can still laugh about it the next day. And you don't have to wake up and be like, gosh, I have a horrible fantasy team. Because it's one and done. You don't ever have to have that fantasy team again. Thank you, Chris Sale and Tigers right-handed hitters. Any other standouts you guys want to talk about? Or shall we transition to the mailbag?
There actually are a couple.
Good.
A couple. And one, it looks like you have some notes even beyond the mailbag, but I don't see him in here, is Mike Leake, who had...
Oh, right. That was a miss on my part. I'm sorry.
He did have a home run. He also pitched 8 innings against the Braves. And that's 7+ innings in 4 straight for Leake. And I kind of felt like this coming in, but, you know, starting pitcher was so deep, it took a while. Like, there wasn't much need to, like, reach as far as Leake. But I feel like his innings eating potential has kind of been overlooked in fantasy. He threw 214 and a third innings last year, which you don't normally see from pitchers that far down the list. You normally see that from aces. And it's not like he's a bad pitcher. He's going to give you a so-so ERA, so-so whip, poor strikeout rate. But that many innings in points leagues, every time he's making 2 starts, he needs to be started. And I think if you were in a bind because you only had, you know, you had to kind of a thin pitching staff and you had to start him in a 1-start week, I don't think he's going to hurt you that much. I think he probably needs to be owned. Well, definitely, seeing his ownership percentage, only 52. He needs to be more owned than that.
Yeah, he's
I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, 3 of his last 4 years, Mike Leake has had an ERA 3.70 or higher.
Well, yeah, here's the thing, because he's become a really good control pitcher, so he can give you those innings. But it's the ERA, it's what he does in those innings that makes me hesitate a lot of weeks, even when he's got 2 starts. And just looking, taking out the first start, which is by far his worst start of the year, over the last 4, he has allowed 5 home runs. And he's not a lot of high batting average, but the ISO is pretty high for him. It's just a little under 200, which is not very good. So he's giving up extra base hits.
Right.
And he's only had 1 of those 4 starts in Cincinnati. So this is why I hesitate with Leake.
I get it. And he, I'm not saying he's like this must-own, you know, emerging ace. I feel like, though, you know, R.A. Dickey gets a lot of attention in fantasy because he won a Cy Young, what, 3 years ago? And he eats a lot of innings. That's really all he does now is eat innings. People still own him when he's going to have an ERA over four. He's going to have some disastrous starts. I think Leak does a better job of avoiding the disaster. He's just like a higher-end version of R.A. Dickey, I feel like. So if you keep turning your attention to Dickey and he keeps disappointing you, I think Leak's going to disappoint you a lot less.
Hey, so just in a vacuum, you would rather have Leak than Dickey?
Yeah, I would.
I would definitely rather take Leak. What?
You can continue that. You can continue that with an R.A. Dickey putt, you know.
Where is this podcast going?
It's Friday. You know, before you give your next standout, I want everybody to know that today is supposed to be Bagel Friday, but there were no bagels. And
A ripoff.
Yeah, I'm pretty disappointed. Who else did you want to talk about, Scott?
Garrett Richards. Because he's been mostly good since coming back, but none of his starts he's had fewer than 3 walks. It's 10 walks and 18 innings total, which coming up, that was his problem. I mean, prior to last year, had a lot of control issues. I don't feel like I'm that worried about it yet because he is coming back from injury, and he's been good for the most part. I think the encouraging sign yesterday is when he first came back, the average fastball velocity was around 95, which is still like one of the best in baseball, but it was down a couple miles per hour from last year. That improved in this most recent start, so it still seems like he's working his way back and he's giving you quality starts in the meantime, but he's not everything he should be just yet.
And Richards got the win yesterday, and what an exciting ninth inning that was. Bases loaded, 2 outs, bottom of the ninth, down by 1. Ike Davis hits a shot to straightaway center field, and Mike Trout makes a leaping catch in front of the wall. That was really exciting, and Houston Street got a save. He killed your whip and your ERA, but he got the save, and he secured the win for Garrett Richards. All right, emails and tweets. East Coast Seattle fan. I just thought this was interesting. He tweeted all 3 of us yesterday, and I saw Scott's response, but I thought it was kind of cool to bring up. Grade the trade in a keeper league. I get Billy Hamilton for a 5th-round value, and I give D. Gordon for a 6th-round value. And it just kind of made me think about how I would value Billy Hamilton at this point. But give up D. Gordon for a 6th-round value, get Billy Hamilton for a 5th-round.
I answered to him on Twitter that I'd rather have Gordon, so I want to do this trade because, I mean, it's a round less. He plays the premium position, second base, as opposed to the outfield. And then a third reason is I'm still more confident in Gordon's production than Hamilton's. I mean, Hamilton's batting what, like 210 so far this year?
It might be more around 220. He did homer yesterday. But yeah, I wanted to bring this up. And the point of the mailbag is not to help people with their individual questions. The point is to, you know, bring up topics that could help a lot of fantasy owners. And I just wanted to see where you guys were on Billy Hamilton. I think he'll probably exceed his stolen base total from last year if he stays healthy. But we would like to see a little bit more hitting.
Yeah, and I'm really not that much lower on Hamilton now than I was a month ago. But I am higher on D. Gordon, and I was already fairly high on him to start with. So whereas I think a month ago I probably would have given this a B-minus, I'll give it an even C.
Okay. Billy Hamilton. So, Billy Hamilton was like, I don't know, 5th-round pick in roto leagues.
Yeah.
And we kind of talked about sort of an interesting strategy. He might kill you in some categories. Where would you guys want to take him now? I know Scott was the low man on him in roto leagues. Where would you want to take him now?
Well, I was saying he's not really any lower on him before. And even though, you know, I was being the downer on Hamilton compared to Gordon, I am a little higher on him than I was coming in because I feel like he's showing some signs that he's going to give you that monster steals total we expected last year and didn't get. That said, I had 13 steals, 7 of them came in the first 4 games, so he does need to hit some for that to continue, but it seems like he's improving in that regard.
So I'm sorry, give me a round. 12-team roto.
I'll say, because I wouldn't have been taking him in the 5th to start with, so I'll say the 7th.
That works for me.
One more good stat. He's hitting 217, by the way. One more good stat. 16 runs scored in 20 games.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that is. Okay, John from Montana. Al, this one's special for you. Special Al Melchior, because you opened my eyes to Josh Reddick. Do you think Josh Reddick could end up like 2014 Melky Cabrera? As in a surprisingly productive outfielder you could pick up off the waiver wire at the beginning of the season cheap, not due to lack of talent, but an artificial deflation of value. Is Josh Reddick this year's Melky Cabrera?
That's interesting, because I hadn't really thought about Reddick with that sort of upside. I did put him up in my rankings, but I think I've got him still like in the 40s. So it's something to consider. I had not been thinking of Reddick. I mean, I see the similarities in terms of how they're undervalued. But it sounds like he likes Reddick even a little bit more than I do, just a little bit.
Reddick is 53% owned, guys. He went 2-for-4 yesterday. He's got a .368 batting average. Only 2 home runs, 6 steals, or 6 runs and 2 steals. But 6 walks, 4 strikeouts. Go ahead.
Well, the 4 strikeouts is what I was getting to. I feel like when we first really started talking about him like a week ago, I kept saying, oh, he has 4 strikeouts and 30-something. It's still 4 strikeouts. Now, a week later, in 50-something, 26 at-bats, his last 8 games, 0 strikeouts. And that's not the Josh Reddick we saw in, you know, previous years. It is the one we saw when he came back from injury late in 2014. I don't know what happened to him during that time he missed with, I think it was a knee issue. But he's come back much more contact-oriented. But I still think there's enough power potential there. I mean, this is a guy who had a 30-homer season in 2012, I mean. So, must own, clearly. Even though he's sitting against some left-handers right now, I think that's going to change at some point because it just seems like he's really figured things out.
And he's 53% owned, and the power has not been there yet. But last 55 games, last year after he came back from the injury, he hit .299 with 8 home runs and 13 doubles and 3 triples. So maybe it could be there. So would you rather have Jake Mariznick or Josh Reddick?
Oh, Reddick by a lot.
See, Mariznick, I feel like, is being overlooked a lot, too. I do like Reddick more, but both of them, I need to figure out a way to get them higher in my rankings because they're both inching toward must-own status, I think.
Here's a tough one. Dexter Fowler or Josh Reddick?
He's a half step behind those other two because he's just gotten off to hot starts before and just fallen apart. Mm. Kind of literally.
Good point.
I guess.
Good point.
But I think the fact that he has 6 steals already and the Rockies and the Astros didn't make use of his speed like the Cubs seem to be.
And for good reason because he was stealing successfully, I think, only about 60% of the time with those teams. Last season was better and this year obviously much better too.
And the Cubs.
So if that continues, that changes things.
The Cubs might be a team that runs a lot. I mean, look at what Rizzo's doing. They might be this year's Reds.
Or this. Have you seen the Astros steals totals? AJ Hinch, man.
Oh, well, but they have guys that I think you expect to steal, right?
Yeah, but, Mariznick wasn't doing this before.
Yeah.
Springer wasn't doing this last year. I know he had the leg thing going on. And then who's the other? Well, Altuve did do this, I guess. Yeah. But, yeah, all three of those guys, at least going into yesterday, were leading the league, the AL, in stolen bases.
Oh, wow.
Each of them. Yeah.
All right, rank these 3 starting pitchers in a points league. Travis Wood, Jared Cozart, Willy Peralta.
Cozart, Wood, Peralta.
I'll go Peralta out of Cozart and then Wood.
Here's Dave from Little Rock. Hunter Pence just hit the waiver wire. Should I drop Melky, Revere, Polanco, or Span for him?
Well, that was dumb. He's about to come back.
Yeah. Let's help him out. Let's,
Who would you drop? We got, Melky, Revere, Polanco, or Span?
Yeah, it's between, Revere and Span for me. I suppose Revere.
Yeah, definitely.
And then a buy or sell. Buy or sell ranch corn nuts.
Let's buy or sell corn nuts in general. Have you ever had them?
I've never had corn nuts.
I don't think I have.
I have.
Yeah,
like
how
once.
Are they?
I haven't had a chance to experiment with flavors. I don't know what Dave from Little Rock is doing.
Well, I mean, should I? Is this something I should check out, just the regular corn nuts? Because
no.
I've never been tempted.
No. Just eat nuts or corn.
I'm looking at a 24-pack of ranch corn nuts. This is from Staples.com. I'm not sure why they have them. $36.
$36
for a 24-pack of ranch corn nuts.
24 packs of ranch corn nuts?
Yeah, I mean, that could be a
bargain. Oh, are they like, they come in little packs and they're 24?
Yeah, I don't,
servings,
you don't eat individual corn
container.
Nuts.
I mean, I don't know what the hell a corn nut is. And
it's just a corn that's been cooked in such a way that you can eat it like a nut, I think.
Okay, it looks like there are four corn nuts per bag, and there are 24 of those, and those cost $36. That's still too much for me. There's no way I'm paying $36 for something that I've never had. Okay, Dave, that was Dave's question. So next we go to Christopher. Dear Joe, Buck, and Joe, is Alex Wood approaching being droppable?
No, he is approaching, and I actually blogged on this yesterday. I think he's very closely approaching benchable, but that's a whole different thing.
Who are we talking about?
Alex Wood.
I was encouraged by the uptick in strikeouts yesterday. I know I wasn't on the podcast yesterday, so I didn't have it. Or the start was 2 days ago. I wasn't on the podcast yesterday. But he started throwing his secondary pitches again. He was hardly using them at all the first few starts, and he got more strikeouts. Now, he didn't get more swings and misses, which Al probably pointed out.
Oh, I definitely did.
But I mean, two marks in his favor, the strikeouts and the secondary pitches, and then one against him. I'd take that as a step in the right direction.
And I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, this is not relevant to that, but shouldn't it be Buck, Joe, and Joe?
Buck, Joe, and Joe.
To go in chronological Yankee manager order?
Oh, that's what it was.
I mean, wouldn't it be?
I couldn't even figure it out.
Hmm. I was just I see Joe and Buck next to each other, and I'm
exactly.
Yeah,
that's clever. Well, that's probably why he did it that way.
All right. Next up, this is from Will in San Diego. Is it finally time to drop Chase Utley? I could drop him for Luis Valbuena, Marcus Semien, Brandon Phillips, or Odubel Herrera.
One of these things is not like the others.
you got to pick up Semien, right?
Yes.
But overall, do you think Utley could bounce back after a terrible month, or do you think he's just waiver wire fodder at this point?
I mean, you know, I've had the temptation to just dismiss him, but, you know, Jimmy Rollins has also taught me the perils of doing that. So,
yeah,
I think Utley could bounce back.
We talked about Dallas Keuchel yesterday, but here's a question from Cody G. Should I sell high on Dallas Keuchel? If so, who would you target?
I've thought about this, and by the way, Heath wrote an excellent blog post yesterday about Keuchel and comparing him to Tim Hudson, which is the comparison I should have made on yesterday's podcast. It's an excellent comparison. But I think you could sell high on Dallas Keuchel because, you know, the ground balls are legit. I think the low ERA is legit, but not quite as low, you know, sub one as it is. So if you can get somebody to buy him as, you know, a top 10 starter, mm-hmm. I mean, I think he could finish that way, but I'm not saying that the odds are necessarily in his favor for that. Then, you know, he's worth selling.
Would you swap him straight up for Strasburg today? Because I know you're kind of down on Strasburg.
Yeah.
I would absolutely do that, but.
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about for Cole Hamels?
Yeah. That's even easier.
Yeah, I'd do that too.
Yeah.
Couple more here from Antoine. Is it time to safely let go of Carlos Rodon? Should I pick up Cole Mentor or Bradley in his spot?
I wouldn't. No, because I'm the low guy on Bradley, I'm assuming. So maybe I'm not the best representative to talk about him, but I mean, certainly Cole Mentor, you know, he's pretty replaceable in most formats. And I think Rodon's going to have pretty good value when he gets in the rotation, which is likely to happen later in the year.
And finally, from Sam A. in North Hollywood, California. Adam, can you please explain the origin of the Jock Peterson voice? As Scott mentioned, I can't say the name without using the voice. Sam, are you 16 years old? Come on, man. I know, like, you're a very...
Oh, come on. We both had to have it explained to us, right? I know.
Yeah,
I did.
And once I got it, it was hilarious.
Oh, really? Yeah. You guys both didn't know that?
Well, not the first time, no.
Oh.
My mind didn't immediately go to that place. I mean, I obviously remember the scene once you explain it.
Yeah, no, it was familiar, but I couldn't place it right away.
Yeah.
Rudy, what the hell is the matter with you? It's Ferris Bueller's day off when Cameron impersonates Sloane Peterson's dad, George Peterson, and he yells at Rudy. It's so funny. What a great scene. He says, produce a corpse. I don't know if you remember that, but he said that Sloane's grandmother or grandfather died. And, Rudy's so convinced it's Ferris Bueller that he tells him to produce a corpse and then you can pick up your daughter. And then Ferris Bueller calls on the other line. It's great stuff. All right. Injuries, news, and notes. Jose Fernandez threw to live hitters for the first time. Hooray. Alcides Escobar was out after being hit by a pitch in the face Wednesday, so he was out yesterday. Adam Eaton shaved his beard, guys, and he said about bearded Adam Eaton, he said, that guy sucks, I've got to get rid of him. And he made, Al, you were watching the game, did you see the throw he made?
Yeah, I did.
Ooh, that was a pretty bad throw.
Yeah.
He had a bad, bad game, offensively and defensively.
He needs to regrow the
beard. Yeah. Denard Span came back fairly recently from his injury, and he has been awesome, and he's been running all over the place, so he has some general soreness. General soreness,
it's not,
chicken.
It's not general, though. It's not.
It's core,
it's,
right?
It's located in the area where he had the surgery, the core, yeah.
Oh, so, okay. Oh, well, I read.
I mean, that changes things a little, I think.
I always welcome a general soreness reference, but.
Well, he's going to sit today and hopefully return tomorrow. Maybe we'll know more. If he doesn't return Saturday, then maybe it's more serious. But they were downplaying it.
Right. He played yesterday, right?
He played, but he left early.
Oh, okay.
They were
up
big, I think. I don't know if they were up big when he left. You know what? Let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Okay, Denard Span. Come back soon. Get well soon. John Jay batted leadoff again with Matt Carpenter batting second for St. Louis. I like leadoff hitters in good lineups.
You like John Jay.
I don't really like John Jay that much for fantasy, but if I'm in like a 14-team league and I need an outfielder, and he's batting leadoff, could be pretty good.
If it lasts, I mean, could change next week.
It sure could. Cole Calhoun batted cleanup with Albert Pujols out. He went 2-for-5. Brandon Phillips was out with an illness. Ricky Nolasco should be back soon for Minnesota, but Tommy Malone is going to the bullpen, so Trevor May will stay. And shortstop Wilmer Flores of the Mets committed his sixth error yesterday.
And in related news, you see who they're calling up?
No.
Dilson Herrera.
Oh. So
yeah.
What do you guys think about that?
Well, I think they see him as even less of a shortstop than Flores, so I don't know that Flores's job is at risk here. And I don't know that Herrera will stick around that long, because I think the plan is to move Daniel Murphy to third base until David Wright gets back. So, I mean, at some point, I would think Daniel Murphy becomes trade bait, but if the Mets stay in contention all year, maybe not. I guess what I'm saying is I don't see Herrera making a significant fantasy impact.
Okay.
But he's a good enough prospect that he's worth keeping an eye on.
I'm just going to read some names here for three up and three down. We talked about Josh Reddick. He's in three up. So is Matt Adams, and so is Todd Frazier. And Adams is 77% owned. He's batting .304 with three homers and is red hot in his last three games. And Todd Frazier is a top three third baseman right now. Even with a .238 batting average, he has seven home runs and three steals. Remember, though, Frazier, .290 batting average, .500 slugging before the All-Star break. .247 batting average, .396 slugging in 63 games after the All-Star break. Anything to say about Adams or Frazier?
Well, as far as Frazier goes, I think he's just streaky in general. So, I mean, I wouldn't draw the conclusion. I'm not sure this is where you were going, that, you know, his batting average is low now, and it's probably going to be even lower in the second half. I just think that's going to be up and down. But what he seems to be proving over and over again is that even with the mediocre batting average, he's highly valuable.
His strikeout rate is way down, isn't it? I mean, he had 3 strikeouts in this game, but only 15 all year?
Yeah, 12 walks.
Yeah. 12 walks? He's the number two third baseman in points leagues, so I don't know that anyone's concerned about him. I've been more encouraged than anything.
Three down, Avisail Garcia. I guess it'd be nice if people would if instead of like just everybody saying he has power, if he would actually hit for power, because he's not doing that. He's batting 309, but has one home run and three doubles this year. Ian Kinsler, kind of interesting, batting 283, no power at all. No home runs for Ian Kinsler, five doubles and a triple, yet still number four in points, number seven in Roto at second base. And Wilson Ramos has been kind of cold. Oh, he's 9 for his last 25, but again, this is a powerless three down. Two combined home runs for Garcia, Kinsler, and Wilson Ramos.
I never realized with Ramos until I did a By the Numbers piece earlier this week that he's got pretty drastic splits. He's not very good at home, particularly as a power hitter. And Nationals, they've been playing at home, right?
They've been on the road.
And it heated up. This hot streak, well, you're saying it's not a hot streak.
No. 9 for 25, but still.
So it is a hot streak.
But still not really.
It started like right when they went on the road too, because I'm actually going to have him in 5 up, 5 down this week as one of the down. Or I may not have him in the column, but it'll be in the video at least. Because they're going to be back at home. So thanks for pointing that out. I want to talk about Garcia though, because I'm totally with you on the thing that, you know, we keep hype, or maybe not we, but
me.
Some people keep hyping this guy and he hasn't done anything still. And he's 84% owned. And we're talking about guys like Josh Reddick and Jake Mariznick, how, you know, we need to find a way to get them on our rosters. They're less owned than that. So I don't know. First of all, I don't know where all the hype for Garcia started.
I do.
Because the minor league track record's not great, and
I blame Joe Buck.
Yeah.
When they were in the World Series, when he was on Detroit, I think it was then, he was talking about him like he was the next Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah, he was.
And I love Joe Buck.
He was a top 100 Baseball America guy before he got called up. There's pedigree there. And it kind of, you know, I was down on Adam Jones for a long time until he eventually broke out several years into his career. So maybe that happens for Garcia too, but doesn't look like it's imminent. So I don't know why you need to hold on to him when guys like Mariznick and Reddick are out there.
I was part of the hype coming into this year because I thought he was a breakout candidate, and he still could break out, as Scott just alluded to. But yeah, it seems like the hype overall about his power is definitely disproportionate to what he showed even as a prospect.
Let's look at fringy starting pitchers here and give me your top four. James Paxton, Danny Duffy, Daniel Norris, Jesse Chavez, Scott Feldman, and Trevor May. Paxton, Duffy, Norris, Chavez, Feldman, May.
Top four?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go Paxton, Duffy, Chavez, and May.
And that to me would say that you think Daniel Norris is overowned at 59%.
Yeah, I do. And I actually hesitate to leave Norris out because he was a great strikeout pitcher in the minors. I know he's got great upside, but I just really have doubts about, particularly, in the AL East, him really, you know, being able to thrive.
Heath was watching his start yesterday where he got pulled after only three innings, which was strange.
Yeah.
Cause the final line was okay. He said he, like, his curveball just looked awful. Like, he said it was
like a little,
like when you're teaching a kid to throw a curveball and it just goes like straight up in the air. And like he had the dead arm and then the good start and then this, where it seems like he was pulled just because he was on the verge of disaster. I don't know that he's all right. I still want to hold on to him in a head-to-head points league because of the relief pitcher eligibility and the upside and all that, but
I do say I want to amend this because I do want to get Norris in the top four, and I had May 4th, but I'm actually going to bump Chavez because I think he's got pretty limited shelf life anyway.
You do? Why?
The A's rotation. Well, because Jared Parker's coming back. Mm. AJ Griffin will come back.
Okay.
And he just seems like the obvious guy to go back to the bullpen.
Okay, interesting, because Scott was raising him, was making Chavez up in the rankings, moving him up.
Well, a lot of it's the relief pitcher eligibility, and in Roto, I don't think he needs to be owned. But if I picked him up because of, I wanted a Sparp, I'm not dropping Chavez after this start.
I just want to say that, not that I would pick up Scott Feldman, but if I were in a deep enough league and quality starts meant anything, he's kind of really good at getting quality starts. And you can put together a nice 450 ERA with that. But last, like, four of his five starts this year are quality starts for Feldman. And last year, 69% of his starts were quality starts. That was just behind David Price, James Shields, Steven Strasburg, and Samardzija. It was ahead of Porcello, Loesch, and Scherzer, tied with Simon and Peralta. So he kind of does that. And again, I have no interest in him, but I just thought that was interesting that he's good at going six innings and giving up three earned runs or less.
And I've noticed that, and the few times that I've tried him out as a two-star pitcher, I don't think it's ever worked out.
He's the chicken pot pie of pitchers.
Which means what?
I mean, there's a pretty good chance he's not going to be terrible, but there's not a very good chance it's going to be outstanding either. It's just, you know, sustenance.
What about the corn nuts of pitchers? What would that be?
I don't know. Cause I don't really like corn nuts.
You've had them though.
Yes.
That makes two of us. Three. How many times have you had them? Count on one hand?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely you can count on one hand.
You don't need to go back to them once you have them, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So what pitcher is that?
After last night, it looks like Daniel Norris.
All right, guys, listen. So we got about 11, 12 minutes left. We're going to do
That's
five.
Heath, by the way, Heath walked in.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody knows his voice by now.
We'll do 5 minutes of DFS.
Yeah.
And then we'll do 6-7 minutes of week four help, hitting and pitching advice. Oh, my computer again shut down? Are you serious? Now I can't tell you how badly I did yesterday in FanDuel, but I think I came in almost last in a tournament of over 17,000 people, and I think I scored one point in FanDuel.
That is awesome. I actually saw a couple of tweets with screenshots of people that finished in the red last night.
Ooh.
In the red is in negative points?
Negative points on FanDuel. Their entire team combined for negative points.
I had Sale. I had JD Martinez, Yoenis Cespedes. I had Kipnis. I was awful. I had 1 point. All right, moving on from that since we're running low on time. Heath, who do you like today in DFS?
You know, yesterday everybody had Sale because he was the obvious play at pitcher. I don't feel like there's quite as much of an obvious play. Scott Kazmir is probably my favorite cash option just because he's the most likely of those three studs to get a win. In tournaments, I'm more likely to, I like Strasburg and Harvey against each other.
Scherzer and Harvey. Scherzer.
Scherzer, okay. I like that a lot more than Strasburg. I like those two against each other at basically the same price because it's really easy to make tournament lineups the exact same lineup with both pitchers and you're probably going to get a win.
Do you ever do that in a two pitcher league? Would you go with the two guys facing each other if they're good enough?
I wouldn't do it in a situation with these two, I don't think, because they're so expensive.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Good point.
And you're spending so much money and there's no way you get two wins.
Do you think there are going to be 70 runs scored in the Yankees-Red Sox game tonight?
No. I think that I think there's a better chance that there's less than seven scored.
Really? Okay, so you're not stacking Red Sox and like how do you not stack like Mookie Betts and Dustin Pedroia are really cheap and they're going against Sabathia.
I'm not saying I'm not going to play any Red Sox or Yankees.
Okay.
I just said there's a better chance of less than seven than 70.
Less than okay. All right. So who do you like today hitting?
Okay. I gotta preface this, and I know I gotta be quick. And I know everybody's gonna say all Heath ever talks about is the Royals. And if you've read my articles, you know that yesterday was the first day I even had the Royals as one of my top three stacks, and they were the third stack. But the reason why is we were looking at the pricing on FanDuel, and as of now, the Royals are the market inefficiency of daily fantasy baseball.
Yeah, Alex Gordon is really cheap, and he is like one of the hottest players in baseball.
You go through by position and sort the players by fantasy points per game, and then see whose price sticks out almost at every position at being way cheaper than they should be. And it's Royals.
That's because Yordano Ventura threatened to to being the FanDuel executives.
No, it's not. It's because...
No, you're wrong, Adam. That's not it.
It's because the FanDuel pricing algorithm is weighing ownership percentage higher than performance.
Okay.
And the East Coast bias causes Royals players to be underowned.
So any in particular that you want in your lineup today?
They're my number one stack for the first time this year against Kyle Lobstein.
Yep.
I like Lorenzo Cain. I like Sal Perez. Gordon and Hosmer are actually almost as good or sometimes better against lefties than they are righties. So I like both of them as well. Especially if Escobar's out. I don't know if anybody noticed, but Escobar was out last night and Alex Gordon led off.
Yeah, yeah.
I like if he leads off and then Cain hits second and Hosmer hits third, I think all three of them right there.
Okay.
Final thing. Can I have two more minutes for Daily Fantasy?
Yeah, go for it.
It's the Adam Azer special. Batter versus pitcher. Carlos Santana, 6 for 18, 1 home run, 3 RBIs versus Burley.
Okay.
Joe Mauer, 9 for 21, 2 home runs, 5 RBIs versus Quintana.
I saw that one, but he's just so many good first basemen. I don't want to start Joe Mauer.
Starling Marte, 8 for 18, 1167 OPS versus Lance Lynn.
He's very expensive. But,
Neil Walker.
Yes, I like the Neil Walker call.
10 for 31, 2 home runs, 8 RBIs versus Lynn, and Josh Harrison, 7 for 16, 1 home run against Lynn.
What about Alexi Ramirez, 3 for 6 with a home run against Kyle Gibson?
Okay, it's one thing for me to appease you by bringing these batter versus pitcher things in, but I'm not going to start going for sample sizes that could have been accumulated in one game.
No, okay, but I do have Ramirez in my lineup because it freed up a lot of money to spend at other positions.
Okay.
And he had 2 hits yesterday, right?
Yeah, I think so. So I figure like there could be some good stuff coming.
Two more.
Mark, 2 doubles yesterday, actually. Sorry.
Mark Reynolds, if he happens to get in the lineup, 5 for 13 with 3 home runs against A.J. Burnett.
Uh-huh.
And then the best batter versus pitcher play of the day. Who is it?
Corey Hart.
No.
Who?
Corey Hart is like 5 at-bats, too.
I know.
Yeah. Okay. Evan Longoria, 14 for 36, 6 home runs against Chris Tillman.
Ooh,
that is... like that.
I mean, but he stinks now. Like, he never homers.
Yeah, and Chris Tillman got really good.
I'm going to say Longoria goes 1 for 4 with a single.
Okay.
How about this? Andrew McCutchen, 10th most expensive outfielder, having a bad year, 5 for 35... with 13 strikeouts, no home runs, no walks against Lance Lynn. I'm not starting him.
No, I'm not starting McCutchen either.
And Mark Teixeira, even though I like lefties against Masterson, 2 for 17 against Masterson, so I'm not sure about that one.
Yeah, I don't really care about that one, but
okay.
I'm not going to play Teixeira probably just because there's other options. I mean, I'm already trying to decide between Eric Hosmer and Kendrys Morales, so how am I going to factor Teixeira in there?
5 minutes, guys. We got to be prompt. Week 4 hitting help. Scott, do it.
Well, I can be super prompt here because I didn't bring in all of my notes, but I can give you the 5 best and worst matchups for the upcoming week. Yankees are number 1, followed by the Rays, Padres, Astros, and Dodgers. Worst hitting matchups are the Royals, the Twins. Sorry, the Royals, Heath.
That's okay.
they're due to cool off, right?
Yes,
the
absolutely.
Royals, the Twins, the Marlins, the Tigers, and the Rangers. On the subject of the Royals, there are a couple I would consider sitting. Kendrys Morales, who I think has performed the most over his head of all of them. And Alcides Escobar, who hasn't been stealing bases. He missed Thursday's game after getting hit by a pitch in the head. Which you would expect, but hard to know exactly what kind of effect that's going to have on him. And then, obviously, the bad matchup. So I don't like either of them so much. I do like a few Astros, who I mentioned in the good matchups. Jake Marisnyk, who we talked about how hot he is. Chris Carter, he's not hot yet, but he's kind of beginning to show some signs of life. Streak of a bunch of one-hit games. I think a couple home runs in there. So might be time to get him active, especially since I think that's a lefty-loaded schedule. I think you'll probably want to go on the site to check the rest.
I've got a hitter's question for next week.
Sure.
If you're weak at third base, you got an injury issue in the outfield, and you're getting a little bit desperate. What about Yasmani Tomas next week?
He was on the long list of players I considered for 5-up, 5-down. Yes, it does seem like he's playing every day. And I think that, yeah, the Diamondbacks have 3 games at Colorado.
And 3 at home.
Helps, and then
or maybe 4 at home.
4 at home, I think.
Yeah.
Which is even better.
They're at home and at Colorado.
Yeah, so if it was 10 up and 10 down, he might be in it.
Okay, good.
It's a good player to bring up.
Thank you, Heath.
Yep.
All right, Al, give me some 2-star pitchers that might be available that we could pick up.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to scroll down because I was going to talk about some sit start options with guys on the bench. But in terms of who's actually available, really not a lot. Kyle Hendricks, who I haven't said a nice thing about all year, is actually one of the better 2-start waiver options. He's 56% owned. He's at St. Louis, at Milwaukee. Those matchups don't terrify me. And he's been a good contact and ground ball guy. That's the sort of player with decent matchups who could do pretty well in a 2-start week. So I like Hendricks. I also like Jeff Locke, who's had 2 really bad starts in a row, but he's got a BABIP that I think is just under 500 in those 2 starts, and the peripherals are really not that different from Hendricks, being a ground ball control guy who should do well with 2 starts. Jesse Hahn, only 50% owned, at Minnesota, at Seattle. He's safe. He's good. I like him. I would give Jesse Chavez a try at Minnesota, at Seattle, even though his start yesterday afternoon was not all that great. And I'll go deep for one more. This is sort of a last resort, but I actually put in a claim for him. I think it was in the podcast league and didn't win him, and that's David Phelps, who has starts at Washington, at San Francisco. Now, the opposing pitchers are Zimmerman and Bumgarner, so he's got that, particularly the Bumgarner start, working against him. But Phelps has been really good at Marlins Park. I think he'll be really good in any pitcher-friendly venue, and he might be a surprisingly good option.
Were there guys you wanted to sit this week that people might actually think about starting?
Yeah, well, I mentioned Hughes, and this is just, you know, to make sure that, he really is healthy. And Shane Green, I would take a wait-and-see approach this week because I think he's got great potential, but he just hasn't been good the last couple times out. So I would go with one of those options over Shane Green.
I've got a sit question for you. Yordano just started his suspension so that he could come back next Friday. So he will get a start next week at Detroit.
That's a good one. That's one actually I should put in the column. And yeah, with just one start, I would sit him.
Sitting Yordano Ventura. Okay. All right, guys. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Same to you.
Heath, can you reciprocate? All right.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for having me on today. I really enjoyed it.
Scott White, Al Melchior, Heath Cummings. I'm Adam Azer. Talk to you Monday.